Hello and good evening. I'm Lisa Idris.
And I'm Sharad Kutin.
Welcome to Consider This. This is the show where we want you to consider and then reconsider what you know of the news of the day. Budget 2022 is tabled in Parliament today. It is Malaysia's largest budget yet, with allocations of up to 332.1 billion ringgit. That's up 3% from the previous years. Now, the government is, however, expecting revenue to drop by 1.22% and therefore forecasts a deficit of up to 6%. Now, many look to the government to kickstart economic recovery and to address structural issues such as youth underemployment, a health system under severe stress, and inadequate social protection. But have the political imperatives of the day determined the thrust of Budget 2022? Let's ask our first guest tonight. Abel Benjamin Lim is an economist at the Bait Al-Amanah Research Institute. He joins us now. Abel, I know it's been only a few hours since Budget was tabled, so everyone's still digesting all the different announcements. But I'd like to get your initial reactions, please. It's a big budget, but I'm just wondering whether it's bold enough budget for what Malaysia needs right now to rebuild as we aim to recover from this pandemic.
Yeah, thank you, Melissa. My point of view, I think it is a bold move indeed. However, this bold move is more focused towards short term, but not much towards the long term, where the budget 2022, the priorities for short-term relief programs and also the stopgap measures at expense of more towards the medium, so long-term sustainability growth measures. Yeah, it's more towards a short-term.
Yeah, so Abel, you know, perhaps, you know, the recently announced, Malaysia plan, 12th Malaysia plan, how does it fit in? Because you expect long-term planning there. The annual budget really is for the year. So do they sync?
Yeah, in terms of if you were to sync with all the national blueprints, you're looking in terms of the 12 MP as well as the SPVs, they do sync in ways and measures which really needed to look at different measures, especially in terms of inclusivity. I think that's something that we really look at. What's most important is what we can see that the effort has been put into the budget, even though it's short-term in my point of view. However, we are really working towards resilience, also working towards rebuilding and recovery. However, what is there in store in terms of long-term in the budget 2020 is something that we will really want to look forward to and to see whether how we can really work things out from there.
Okay. Well, looking at the budget and the announcements that were made, I mean, in terms of some hits and misses, which measures particularly for you hit the spot?
Well, if publicly, I guess many would say that they would love the discount given in PTPTN, though some may lament and say, oh no, why it's only 50%, and some would wish for 30% and 50%. However, in my point of view, I do think there are a few different areas which are really good, and I think it's a good hit in terms of building recovery in this particular stage of going through this pandemic and in terms of coming out towards resilience. The very good point that has been portrayed out in the budget is having to take care of the mental health. It's something very crucial, very important. And also in terms of having the PDR investigation of sexual women and also for kids' violence, as well as we've seen the welfare given to the orphanages who are really hit and impacted by the COVID-19, as well as different other initiatives like having sanitary pads for the female, having their mother's milk bank. And also what is very interesting here is what we can see is that all the different initiatives when it comes to the clinic bergerak, you know, and also the bank bergerak. I think these are really a very good hit in terms of the budget and something that is really people really look forward, because it not only help them in terms of life, also in terms of livelihood and sustainability in many ways, in many sense, in living through this crisis.
Abel, I want to ask, because, you know, obviously the PTPTN thing goes to the youth vote. bank as well, that I think all political stakeholders are looking at, so that I can see the political nature of that. Also, the Jamin Kerja job placement scheme, very interesting. It's very ambitious, 600,000 people put to work, but also something that might trouble, others, which is the recruitment or the plan to recruit 80,000 into the civil service and GLCs. I mean, do we want government to be hiring on the basis of a political program rather than on need and merit and quality of for good governance? I mean, what's your thinking on this?
Yeah, that's a good point to really deep dive to talk about it in terms of the Jamin Kerja. In terms of the sustainability of the initiatives, it kind of seems short term. How would it be then, for the company or the employer after the 1 year when the initiative is over? What more on the employee themselves? You know, those who initially they were hired, people will then lose the job. Will this then create this new unemployment? Would it be worse from there? But what's important point that we should look in terms of the aspect is development of human capital. So this needs to be strengthened in terms of the recovery stage because we want to promote as well, we want to enhance skill development. So I guess something very important for us to look in terms of this is the occupation of dignity. So it's not merely just ticking and checking the box that, hey, this may also bring us down into the employment rate of maybe 4%. However, will it then worsen underemployment? So I think this is something very important. You should look at the sustainability of it as well as the development of human capital in terms of Jamin and career. So what are the job creation that will be created from this budget 2022?
Good point. Yeah, good point about the underemployment. That is a structural economic issue we need to address. But can I move to if this budget is one that is also business friendly, looking at some of the allocations, will businesses, employers likely be happy with the allocations under this budget?
Well, there are some who have been giving their views by saying that it may not really help them in different sense, and some say that. What about those who have already closed down? How then would it help them? So I guess these are all very good measures, initiatives implemented then in this budget 2020. However, then again, to reflect back on the beginning, it is more towards the short term. How about the long term? How about in the terms of sustainability of it, in terms of building capacity? How can business really thrive from there? How can they really survive out of this age? Especially, most of them are turning into digitalization, which something is very important. It's an important aspect. Of course, we do have MyDigital, and that has coming out with many efforts to help. I hope to see that even more, that it could really reach out to wider audience, and this will really help more towards, especially those who are the small SMEs, MSMEs, as well as those job seekers or those small business owners.
Abel, thank you so much for sharing your initial thoughts about Budget 2022 with us. Appreciate your time. Economist Abel Benjamin Lim there. We're going to take a quick break, but after this, we'll come back and take a closer look at the government's taxation strategy as laid out in Under Budget 2022. Stay tuned to consider this. Watching Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris, with me Sharad Kutin. If you've just joined us on the show, we're discussing Budget 2022, which was tabled in Dewan Rakyat earlier today. Joining us on the show now, we have Lavindran Sandragasu, tax partner at PwC Malaysia. Lavin, let's take a look at what Budget 2022 revealed about the government's taxation strategy for the next year, for the coming year. I'm just wondering what your initial thoughts are on the initiatives to expand the tax base versus, say, the tax rebates and the tax holidays that were given. Do you feel like the right trade-offs were made?
Hi, Melissa. Hi, Sharad. I think we need to look at this from the backdrop of what has taken place for the last 1.5 years, right? We had couple of economic stimulus programs, a lot of initiatives, you know, because of the extraordinary situation that we were in. So I think from that perspective, what the government has done in terms of trying to broaden the tax base is not on a how shall I put it? It's not complete yet because I think it's a journey that the government has to start. You know, it does need to increase its tax revenues in order to manage its fiscal position. So I think it's the current budget has some short-term initiatives, which I think is in the right direction. But I suppose on a longer term, medium to longer term, the strategy would have to be a lot more comprehensive.
Lovin, I don't expect you to address the apparent inconsistencies between last year and this year on the question of a windfall tax. But I do hope you can address the impact of this windfall tax. You know, you must deal with a lot of clients that might not be happy that this year there is a windfall tax. Tell us, what do you make of it? Will it contribute significantly to the government's coffers?
Right. So again, there are some thresholds in order to meet in order for the windfall tax to sort of kick in. Again, you have to see the number of companies that are going to be caught within this threshold. And yes, I think the initial reaction is that yes, there will be an additional 9% of tax to pay as compared to the current 24% tax rate. But I think it's something that probably the government felt that it's good to introduce, at least for a single year basis. Now, I'm not quite sure, but, you know, at one point in time, there was a single year tax that was introduced to a certain particular sector a couple of years ago. And that was done for a certain reason. And I suppose the same concept is being reapplied here. So obviously there will be some concerns about it. Of course, you know, it's going to apply from the financial year 2022, which is next year. So, you know, reassessments of positions, your cash flows, et cetera, need to be undertaken. And, you know, a lot of budgeting considerations will have to be considered by these companies. And definitely it's going to affect earnings. So, you know, particularly if you're publicly listed, that's going to be a concern.
Lovin, this is according to the budget announcement, a one-off corporate tax, right? But can businesses be assured that this, in fact, will only happen for 1 year? Are there concerns that perhaps the tax levied would make Malaysia unattractive to businesses and to foreign investments?
I think the government is quite clear about it. I don't think the government is going to be, you know, sort of just introducing this on a going forward basis. I do feel that it's going to be a one-off. I think it's just to plug certain gaps in terms of tax revenue that the government needs in the short term. I think you can see from the economic analysis, there is a fairly large budget deficit that the government needs to plug. And so this is a quick way of doing it. It's not going to be a long-term policy because, again, the government has committed that it wants to promote Malaysia as an investment destination. So definitely this is not something that you would do on a long-term basis to introduce such a high tax rate. And again, look at it the other way. I mean, we will lose our competitiveness in the region. Most of the countries in the region are below 20s, right? So obviously this is just a one-off and, you know, sort of to plug the gap.
Yeah, right. But Lovin, you know, people would, the alternative criticism is that the government has missed an opportunity in the last couple of years to tax those companies that made huge profits off the back of, you know, demands on certain products because of the pandemic. But that aside, I do want to ask you whether you can help us discern the difference between the taxes announced that are about revenue generation, and those that you think have a policy implication, they are really about the transformation of our economy, or they're about changing the way in which we spend our money and which government spends its money. Could you see, can you discern some thinking behind some of the taxes?
So I think when you're referring to the new sort of new taxes, right? Again, most of it, as I mentioned, it's more for a short-term measure. I think you will note from the budget itself, there are also other taxes that has been introduced as an incentive, right? So, for example, for reinvestment, the budget has extended the reinvestment allowance, which is an incentive for companies to reinvest for another 2 years, right? So if you look at it from that perspective, I think what the budget is trying to do is to make companies a lot more, focus on building up their business. So in terms of those are the incentive side. But, you know, in terms of the actual new taxes, et cetera, per se, I think the budget has been kind of consistent in the sense that, they're trying to manage a huge aspect of the Malaysian economy, as well as its own finances, by trying to have a sort of a balancing act to it. Right. There's no one fit all for the whole balancing act, if I can call it that.
That's right. Lavindran, thank you so much for joining us on the show tonight. Lavindran Sundrogasu there from PwC Malaysia. Let's take another quick break. More on Budget 2022 after this. Stay tuned. Thank you so much for staying with Sharad and I on Consider This. Joining us now, we have Tan Ihan. She is the Executive Director of the Think Tank Research for Social Advancement, or it's better known as REFSA. Ihan, let's talk about your first impressions of Budget 2022. Your initial response, what stood out to you?
Hi, good evening, guys. Thank you for having me on Astro Awani. Just a quick one, overall feel. I think that it's good that it continues the spirit of the large sort of expansionary budget. I think this is necessary to support the economy. More importantly, I think that it's very encouraging that the government recognizes that the pandemic is unfortunately not behind us. Going through some of the points and some of the allocations and amounts that's being allocated, I think that's very, very clear. And last but not least, what I find which is interesting and is also the first sort of budget that we have, which has a more sort of consultative approach. So I think that's always a good thing. Of course, you have the MOU signed between the government and the Pakatan Harapan Coalition. But as you are aware, in the last couple of weeks and months, there have been a lot of engagement with NGOs, with think tanks like ourselves, with a business chamber of commerce and so on. So in terms of collaborative approach and a process, I hope that remains so for the coming years.
Well, Ian, so it sounds great when things are consultative and there's a discussion, but is there a danger that there's not going to be enough of a check on some areas that are vague? I think REFSA in some of its tweets, flagged some areas that of concern and so on and so forth, that, the political consensus might blunt the necessary criticism to make this a more robust budget. What do you see as, what red flags have you seen in this budget?
Well, so I think, first of all, I think that's where that's why the parliament is there. As much as there's an MOU and also engagement exercise, I think in the coming weeks, there should be more debate. We would almost hopefully expect more sort of robust discussions going on in the parliament, questioning and asking where are the allocations going to be, how are they going to be implemented, specific areas that they are going to be allocated, etc., etc. So I think in that sense, it's not to say that because it's collaborative that, you know, it's just going to be passed through right away. In terms of red flag, I mean, if you look at the amount is quite huge. It's one of the biggest ones in our recent history. But at the same time, I think this budget has been trying to identify and acknowledge a lot of different areas. However, they are mainly sort of quite short-term measures. As you can imagine, with the pandemic and with us trying to recover economically from the pandemic, a lot of the focus has been on short-term immediate support. But I think what is missed out is that the budget has sort of become a short-term exercise rather than that largely sort of ignores longer-term planning. Okay. It would do well if there are sort of some multi-year plans that we can see, okay, how are we going to implement the 12 Malaysia plan, for example.
On that note, Ihan, do you see kind of continuity or syncing with the 12 Malaysia plan? Does Budget 2022 take its cue from what was announced under RMK12?
So this is the first budget since the 12 Malaysia plan is announced. At the moment, it seems to identify certain areas that needs care. There are certain sectors that's been highlighted. The 12 Malaysia plan mentioned about the gig economy, and in this budget, there are some measures to mitigate sort of the scenario for the gig workers and the gig economy. There's a lot of attention on women, for example. There is certain areas that has been translated into the budget. But then again, the other point I want to mention is at the end of the day, it's all about implementation and transparency and accountability. How are we going to monitor that the progress is actually going the direction and the way that we want it to?
Is there a shift, very quickly, is there a shift in thinking about, say, employment in this Jamin Kerja scheme? Is it dangerous if government thinks it should be the employer of last resort?
Well, if you think about SMEs and MSMEs, which takes up a lot of the biggest chunk of our economy, some of them have ceased operation. Some of them are struggling in terms of their cash flow positions and so on. So tied to that is the fact that a lot of the companies can't retain their employees and or they have reduction in their salary and so on. So the measure to ensure that these sort of incentives or initiatives that can allow companies to retain their staff or at least give some support to it, I think is very important at this stage. So from a short-term perspective, I think we do need it. However, you can see from the measures that are given, it's actually targeted to a lower salary range, if I'm not mistaken. I think it's 1,200 ringgit, if I'm not mistaken. So right, it's only for lower salary range. So there's still a lot of work to be done. It's just one part of a small sort of measures that you see.
Understood. Thank you so much, Tan Ihan of REFSA. They're wrapping up this episode. I'm Melissa Idris.
And I'm Sharad Kudan, signing off for the evening.
Thank you so much for watching. Good night.